Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we are at the end of the season. Not totally the end, but like we're there.
Okay, I had the thought watching this episode. I was thinking back to the Seattle like market that they all went to, and I was like, was that this season? This season has felt long.
Well, it's 17 episodes.
That is a lot of content.
It's normally 14. So like 3 extra episodes. And I'm trying to understand like where those 3 episodes come from, because it's the normal number of chefs, I think, or maybe it's not because they added the all-stars in.
I think you're right. Because we did, even though we had that kind of like 4 up, you know, draft round, I do think it was because we had those 3 extra people. And there wasn't, I think we only had 1 double elimination.
Yeah.
I don't know what the average
double elimination. That's where the extra episodes come from. And then, of course, there's Last Chance Kitsch, which.
Uh-huh.
With more like Last Chance Kish this season. But that's not even the episode we're talking about today. So I'm getting ahead of myself. But yeah, we are no longer in Seattle. We're in Alaska. Oh, but before we get into the episode, did we have any leftovers from last week?
I don't believe that we did.
Clean Plate Club. I'm really liking the Clean Plate Club.
Me too.
Everything is a branding opportunity for us.
Everything is a branding opportunity. Yeah, because last week we were on celebrity cruises in the cuisine restaurant. So not much to fact check there.
It was a lot of I can't believe that's a real place. Taste.
Oh, my God.
My gosh. Well, anyway, in that vein, let's begin.
Okay, Nancy, what are your amuse-bouche reactions, episode 14?
So episode 14, I would say I had really high hopes for episode 14, and it just felt a little underwhelming to me. Is that bad?
No, I don't think that's bad.
Or I guess maybe like Alaska isn't the most interesting place.
So I'll kind of come in with my amuse bouche, which was like, Alaska felt very absent. It was sort of like it was very front and center, and yet it didn't feel like as much of a main character as I would have expected it to. And I think that came down to the fact that the chefs and the people that we were hanging out with, they like literally flew a guy in from Charleston. Yes. It's like, why didn't we have like a local. And we'll get into this with the elimination challenge, but you know, Sheldon got kind of roasted for using chum salmon, and it's like, okay, but like, yeah, how would he have known that? You didn't introduce them to a single person that's actually from Alaska this whole episode.
That is very astute. I think that that's exactly sort of like the thing I was missing in my analysis of this. It's just like the challenges were really uninspired.
Yeah.
And like, if you're going to have challenges that are this simple, you really have to have a good – the same way, like, if you're going to have food that's simple, it has to be perfectly executed. If you're going to have challenges that are this simple, they need to have a really good reason for being this simple.
Yeah.
And I didn't really feel – other than, like, the fish is fresh. Like, I didn't really feel like we had a good reason. Like, this would have – I guess in the year of our Lord 2025, this episode would have been the Indigenous people's challenge.
Yes, 100%.
And I think that 10 years ago, whenever this – 12 years ago, whenever this aired, like, that was just not a concept in the minds of, like, the zeitgeist. So you wouldn't have that type of interesting angle. But it was just, like, Alaska, fish. Seattle, fish. Like, there was just nothing interesting about it.
And we didn't even meet the purveyors or the fishermen or the – like, we were at a king crab shack, didn't meet anybody – It was
well branded and cool.
Yeah, it was. It felt like this was all kind of like a set stage that they just sort of like played on all episode. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Okay, well, let's get into the quick fire. Because that is a perfect illustration.
We're back on dry land.
We're back on dry land. We're landlubbers. I am a landlubber.
I love land.
I love land. I love LARB. I do love LARB.
Yeah, we love LARB.
What is a lubber? Okay, I'm going to left over what a lubber is.
Yeah, I just feel like it was just like a derivation of lover.
I don't know.
The way that they said it.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Let's not.
What
yeah.
is a lubber? Okay, tune in next week for that. No more Clean Play Club for us. Not this week. Tune in to next ep. So anyway, we arrive at, what was it, like Lucy's Clam Shack? Tracy's.
Somebody's Clam Shack.
Some pinup girl's Clam Shack.
Was it a Clam Shack or a Lobster Shack?
No, it was a clam or Crab Shack, excuse me.
Okay.
It was neither. It was a Crab Shack.
What the hell did we have? We had crab. I mean,
it
yeah, you're right. You're
crab.
Right.
Crab.
But it's so huge that I'm like, oh, okay. Yes. Alaskan King Crab Shack.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
We got it.
And we have, what's his name? Brock? That's his last name.
Yeah. Sean
Brock.
Oh my gosh.
Sean Brock. Thank you. My old roommate used to idolize Sean Brock. He like bought his rice. There was some special rice that Sean
Brock. I wasn't
vibing
with it, but I also think I was just so fixated on the fact that they flew this guy from Charleston.
Yeah. Sean Brock shows up like every few seasons. He is definitely a friend of the show. He is an incredibly important chef. Like he is a pioneer in Southern cuisine and he's all about like Southern agriculture and grains, which is why my old roommate, like, I think he did some like exclusive rice drop of like Carolina grains. Okay. And my old roommate bought them. And then when he moved out, I kept them. So I have all this fancy rice in my freezer.
Love.
But anyway, besides the point, Sean Brock always shows up and there's always one guy who's like jerking it to Sean Brock.
Yeah.
He's like, he's my hero.
Sean Brock.
Like, I love his style of cooking. He's a man in the kitchen. Like, and it's always a Josh type. Like, I knew the second I saw Sean Brock on that screen, I knew we were getting a talking head from Josh being like, the man is a genius. Like,
okay.
I knew that was going to be his guy.
Okay, let's get into what they cooked because I have to talk about it. I'm glad that Sean Brock did mention before they kicked this challenge off. So the challenge, pretty straightforward. They had to create a dish highlighting Alaskan king crab. They had 30 minutes to do it.
Boring.
And Sean Brock made the point of saying, I just flew on a plane for 13 hours, so this better be good. I was like, yeah, he's right, actually. So, all right. Brooke comes out. She goes in the direction. You know, he gives them a little bit of guidance to basically say, yes. You can't just give me, like, plain crab with butter, even though that's really tasty. I say that because Brooke kind of goes in the simpler direction. She does a crab toast with sweet corn and leek salad.
Mm-hmm.
Josh does – okay, we got to pause on Josh.
We got to fucking pause on Josh.
He does a crab poached in paprika over a succotash. And he's like all into the idea of making a succotash for this man Brock.
Sean Brock. This man Sean Brock.
Yeah, yeah. Just to jump ahead to the moment of judgment, finally, somebody calls this man on his bacon.
Yes. I have the exact same thing in my notes.
And it's like his hero. And so in that way, it's like just the most satisfying that it could have been. Because if it would have been anybody else from anywhere besides the South and somebody that he respects so much, it wouldn't have hit quite as hard as it did, but this guy
was so right.
Had it with the bacon. I've had it with the bacon. I literally saw that and I screamed, finally, like,
my
how
notes
is he getting
in
away
all
with
caps
this?
Bacon was unnecessary, a million exclamation points. Finally, someone says it.
Oh my god,
it's amazing.
Like,
that
such a release
for as heated as Padma got at judge's table about Stefan being a bullshitter. I cannot believe that this bacon has gone unnoticed all season.
I know.
And it's also just like the man is so uncreative. Bacon is such a dominant flavor.
It's like going to make whatever you make tasty.
Tastes like bacon.
Yeah. And look,
and it
bacon
wasn't well
really
executed.
Good.
Also remember like in the beginning of the season when he was like, I'm the pork man. And like four challenges in a row, he cooked pork incorrectly.
Oh, man.
You know, it's just like.
It's too much bacon.
It's too
not
much
not even
bacon.
Anything to do with where we're at either. Like
yes, which I is know. I guess here's the thing. To his in his defense, not to his credit, but in his defense, Sean Brock also has nothing to do with where we are. So like
100%.
I get why maybe Josh was a little confused of like what is right and wrong in this scenario. But whatever. Josh's sauce was broken. The bacon was unnecessary. And the succotash didn't pass the succotash snobs test. Mm-mm. So, okay, but let's talk about Lizzie and Sheldon. So Lizzie makes a frittata with cherry tomatoes, garlic oil, and capers. I think the feedback for her is like conceptually really good idea. They're like, I love the idea of putting the crab in a frittata, but execution was not good.
Too many flavors, too much caper.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about capers?
I like capers, but I don't need a lot of them. I mean, really the only time I'm like, I've had them occasionally in salads that had them in Greece a bit, but it's mostly just like on a lox bagel.
I have tried a lot with capers. I don't hate them. Like, they won't ruin a dish for me, but they do overpower a dish. Like a puttanesca with capers, all I taste is capers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
So
it's just brine. It's just like salt.
Yeah. Like
it's really intense. So if it's like you're, if there's a big bite and it's, I think that's why it works on a lox bagel for me, because it's, it's literally just smushed together with every other flavor. You kind of, and it diffuses it a bit in a way that kind of can't happen with other dishes.
Yes. Yes. Okay. But then Sheldon, Sheldon did something awesome, which was he created a miso with the insides of a Dungeness crab.
Super
cool. And then he put the king crab in the miso with he's been doing a lot of dashi these days with pine tree smoked asparagus tops. Okay, here's something that I loved. In his talking head, he's like, I saw the chefs at Noma do this, so like it's got to be good. It just goes to show that Sheldon, despite being from Hawaii, like a corner of the world that doesn't normally get like culinary attention, he's so open to new ideas.
Yeah.
And unlike Josh, he's not insistent on like forcing everything into this like singular box that he came from.
Yeah, I completely agree. That is the difference between them. And kind of like a little bit the difference between him and even someone like Lizzie too, where I think Lizzie, and maybe I'm still fixating on when we were talking
fried
a couple
chicken.
Episodes ago. Yeah, on the fried chicken. It's like, I'm sorry. There's no reason why you can't know what fried chicken is.
If you live in the United States, it's not an excuse.
Yeah, so it's a bit of that too. So, but I completely agree. He's always reaching out to try to pull in inspiration. So I really liked to see that. And he wins, which is great.
Love
it. Very happy for him.
I know, me too. Because he was just really creative. And I think, like, Brooks's dish was excellent, and it was a step above of just, like, just serving crab with butter.
Yeah.
But Sheldon really pushed the envelope for the parameters of the challenge.
With innards. Like, that's cool. Yeah.
So cool. But anyway, so then we get to the elimination challenge. And this challenge is just salmon and sourdough.
Yeah. I could hear you in my head watching this episode. Like, that's it. I actually didn't associate Alaska with sourdough at all.
Neither did I.
San Francisco, I do. Yeah.
Yeah, this one just felt like, okay.
This is where you miss the local angle, too.
Yes.
You know, if you had somebody in there that has a restaurant or something like that.
Yes, like essentially the quick fire and the elimination challenge were the same challenge. Like fresh, highlight this fresh produce.
Yeah, yep, yeah. And this one they had to cook at scale for, it was a salmon bake for the people of Juneau. I love when they do that. The people of Juneau have spoken.
Yes.
Okay, and then we get a little bit about, we're talking about like the sourdough starter. So they're using a sourdough starter that is like 30 years old or something like that. I went and did a little bit of sleuthing on like sourdough starter age.
Okay, and, good. Thank you.
Is that really a thing? I think so. What I collectively found was, yes, it is a thing. Sourdough starter, it'll develop as the like as the flavors sort of like intensify and the like microbial community becomes a bit deeper and more, you know, intertwined, the flavors will become more complex and more nuanced and more unique to that starter. but it plateaus at a certain point. So it's like maybe after 10 years, the return is not much of anything. So people that are like, that's it's a 100-year-old sourdough. There's also a myth that there's something that where the starter was created imbues some characteristics to it. You know, like a New York sourdough starter versus a San Francisco. That's kind of been debunked. I think it's just – it's like any like thing you pass down in your family, you always think it's yours is better, and there's just a history and a legacy to it that people feel very proud of. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, doesn't make much of a difference. Let's talk about though a bread challenge in a semi finale, basically of Top Chef. What did you think about that?
So I did like that aspect because Bread Week is the most important week on Bake Off, It's a really different dimension of cooking that I think all of them did well. None of them had bad sourdough. I will say that. But I think all of them really had to – it felt like they were all on a level playing field with this particular challenge. And it is a really technical task. Yeah. So to have them do it at this point in the competition feels right.
I agree. I was also thinking – at first, my knee-jerk reaction was, that's not fair. They're not bakers. That's weird that they're asking them to do that. But bread, and more so than anything else, is such a pair and a partner to so many cuisines and mm-hmm. so many great dishes. So if there's anything that somebody that a chef should know how to bake, it would seem to be bread and such a kind of like classic like sourdough. So mm-hmm. I was actually excited to see that. I agree. It was nice to see that was a – like you said, a bit of a line, consistent line for everybody, from a skill perspective. Made me wonder, I don't know that we ever crowned anybody from our prediction, like most likely to be, an incredible baker.
Oh, well, we do have like most likely to have dessert as their secret weapon, which is
dessert.
Different.
We need to think about baker moving forward.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's a good point. I made a good point. So anyways, that was crazy. And then we had a decent amount of drama before we even got into the kitchen with this challenge, because Josh's mm-hmm. wife goes into labor and I wrote this note down, but like when Tom comes up to Josh in the kitchen and is like, hey, like, how's it going? Like any news? And Josh is like, yeah, apparently she's dilated, she's having contractions. And then they like decide to use the Top Chef sound effect, like the meow, and they do, and like the like tension's really high. Like, yeah, she's dilated, she's having contractions. Meow. And it's like, okay, yeah, we get it. Like, this is a tense situation. But it was just like funny that they chose to use that sound effect for the delivery of that news.
That is so funny. Also, like Tom's reaction to that of being like, yo, dude, she's in active labor. Like,
oh my God. Yeah, like, how you doing? And he's just like there making bread. It's crazy.
That was nuts. Oh my gosh. Mm. Well, yeah, and Tom is like, okay, well, what fish are you making today?
Yeah,
let's talk about the salmon aspect of this. So the chefs are given a sourdough starter from a local bakery that's 30 some odd years old. They arrive and it's enough sourdough starter for an army, like these huge containers of sourdough starter. So that's one element of it. They also they don't have to catch the salmon themselves, but they get salmon straight off the boat. They get to pick their fish. I will say that for as boring as these challenges were, it did give me some things that I love about Top Chef, which is like watching people do technical things that I could never do. Like 100%. Watching chefs butcher a salmon or like fillet a fish.
Yeah.
Super interesting to me. Like that's meditation nirvana for me. Just watching people do skills that I am incapable of doing.
Yep.
So I really liked that. And just like watching them pick the fish and discern between the different types I thought was really interesting. I wish that they would have given either us via talking heads or the chefs via a friendly native guide, a discussion of the different types of salmon.
I agree. And that's something that I feel like the more recent seasons, like last season in Wisconsin, they've started to do. We get a little bit of a like nod to the food science and or ingredient. Yeah. I completely agree with you on that. Because I was like, yeah, huh, Chum. Like, the only reason I knew Chum was, like, because Chum and, you know, the Chum bucket from SpongeBob.
Or, like, Chum the Waters.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, completely agree with that. But it was fun to watch them on the docks. They were clearly having a
gay They were in time. Hog heaven.
Yeah.
I've been saying hog heaven a little too much recently.
Oh, you're just in hog heaven.
I'm just in hog heaven with hog heaven.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to check that
What's
out.
What's in hog heaven, hog heaven?
What's in hog's heaven? What is in a hog's heaven?
Just a lot of mud.
I guess.
Do you remember my hog heaven?
What's in? Yeah.
What's in my hog heaven? Yeah. My hog heaven is remembering that, like, 5 years ago when we were all obsessed with feral hogs. Do you remember that? God. There was, like, packs of, like, wild feral hogs roaming.
We'll listen to that Reply All episode. You know that podcast, Reply All? I don't think it exists anymore. R.I.P. But they had a fascinating episode on feral hogs.
Okay, I'll never forget listening to it.
It was when I was working in advertising, and I'd have late nights, and I would listen to I would, like, stay late enough at the office that I'd have to get an Uber home to Brooklyn from Hudson Yards. And so I would, like, listen to a podcast and look at the West Side Highway and, like, feel sorry for myself. And I remember vividly listening to this feral hogs episode at, like, 1 a.m. in an Uber on the West Side Highway.
Oh my God.
That is a distinctive memory for me.
I love that. Thank you for your service to advertising.
To advertising? Yeah. If you've ever been on the Marvel website, you're welcome. but what would be in your hog heaven?
I don't even know. I don't even know how to answer that. Do you have an easy answer for that?
Yeah, like sweet treats, like cakes and cookies. Oh, okay.
I've had a lot of sweet treats in the last 24 hours, so I'm like, I need to – I had some
– You're eating sweet treats without me?
Yeah, I had some Sour Patch last night. There was like, individually wrapped big Sour Patch.
I have one question for you then. Where do you get off?
How dare you?
How do you sleep at night?
I didn't sleep.
How
well
did you
last
sleep
night?
Last night knowing you ate sweet treats without me?
Really not good.
Well,
really
we're getting dinner good. Tonight, so there better be a sweet treat so in my future from you.
They better give us a sweet treat with our receipt.
Yeah. Shout out to Ugly Baby. Ugly Baby was our favorite restaurant in New York City, an incredibly spicy Thai restaurant where they would definitely laugh at you for, like, not being able to handle the spice.
Yeah.
And they closed, but they just reopened a new restaurant called Hungry Thirsty. They opened this week and we're going. It's
Yay!
Our special spot. Yay.
We'll let
okay.
you know how
it is. We digress from the challenge. So the chefs all have their fish. 3 out of 4 chefs decide to make soup. Which I'm not mad about. I absolutely love soup. I don't know that I've ever had soup with salmon in it.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because I saw a video on Instagram. I think it's a very Nordic thing. Like, it's very normal Nordic recipe.
Yeah,
I watched the guy
soups.
Make it and I was like, wow, this is actually really – because it was like creamy. It was like dill, potatoes, salmon. So I had that Nordic cooking cookbook that I was going to – I meant to look up similar recipes to this and I didn't have time. But and it was like a very soupy day out. You know, it's a little misty, a little chilly. So
Alaska is definitely like soup territory.
Yeah, a lot of soup.
Wasn't it like Seward's Folly? Isn't that what they called Alaska?
I don't know.
Seward's Folly. Yes, the purchase of Alaska by Secretary of State William H. Seward in 1867. The nickname was Seward's Folly because I think for a long time the economic benefits of Alaska like did not come to fruition.
Yeah.
And so they're like, that was a huge mistake. So Alaska, it's not only Seward's Folly, it's Super's Folly. Mm-hmm. That was a long walk for a ham sandwich on that one. Didn't really stick the landing. But okay, so let's talk about the soups at hand. Let's start with Josh. Tell us about what he made.
Yeah, Josh did a roasted garlic soup and sourdough black olive croutons with a seared salmon. Garlic seemed like an interesting choice to me.
I've never had garlic soup.
I've never had garlic soup. I'm trying to think of like garlic and salmon also as like a pairing. It's not it's not crazy. I think I'm just realizing now like those aren't really flavors that I associate with each other. And I think that that is
kind
of the critique he got too. It was like everything was good individually. The salmon was great and well cooked. The soup had a ton of flavor, but it didn't really like go together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of flavors and the salmon kind of got lost. But I mean, I'm just impressed he like got food out at all, just given the state of his life at that moment. But crazy. No bacon on that plate.
I think he kind of got a little scared off, but wait for the next episode. Just okay. Doesn't last long. So anyway, two other soups. We've got Brooke and Sheldon making soups. Sheldon makes a pea soup, which sounds delicious. Pea soup with smoked salmon sounded really good to me. Mm-hmm. Like I would like to eat a bowl of that right now, if I may. But he paired it with a chive and green tea sourdough. No.
Not sure about that one.
Both in terms of the chive and green tea combination and then that bread flavor profile with the soup.
Yeah.
Maybe chive.
Chive would have been okay. Yeah. The green tea I didn't get. Mm-mm.
And I think that's how the judges felt too. Unfortunately for Sheldon.
Yeah.
I think it was a universal no on the green tea and chive bread.
Yeah.
Not a good combination. And then for the salmon, they said it was too smoky, the flavor profile. He went a little too heavy-handed with the smoke. The soup was too thick, and the fish was too smashed up. Like, it wasn't treated with respect the way that they would have liked it. And he also used the wrong type of salmon. Kind of like a lot of L's for
Sheldon. He did have a lot of L's. And at that point, it sort of made it feel like it was everybody else's episode to lose.
Yeah.
But then we have Lizzie, and Lizzie's situation, she made an excellent sourdough. She probably made the best bread of anybody. Mm-hmm. She made a sourdough, roll with poppy seed butter, and everybody was really enjoying it. She got a good glaze on it. It was just sort of pretty well executed.
Mm-hmm.
However, she did a grilled sockeye glazed with citrus and beet, and none of that glaze came through. It wasn't salted. It wasn't seasoned. The glaze wasn't there, and so what the judges basically ended up with was like a pretty boring sandwich, like salmon sandwich.
Really uninteresting, if I'm being honest.
I was kind of just surprised that her mind went to a sandwich. Especially having salmon. Like it's not like really a sandwich protein.
I mean, I guess if you have to do bread.
Yeah.
That is a very obvious choice. Or it's not very obvious, but like it is definitely on the table as something you can do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think just as she was saying like earlier in the episode what she was going to do, I already was like, really curious. And then when I saw it, I was like, once again, curious.
Yeah.
It just at no point – and I think Sean Brock said it well. He was like, at this stage in the competition, if you were given us a sandwich, like we have surpassed your delivery.
And she made the cardinal – she broke the cardinal like rule of not tasting her food altogether.
Yeah.
She tasted each individual component and she never tasted everything altogether.
Mm-hmm.
At least don't admit it at that point.
Yeah.
Say you like, did I think and your taste was off.
Here's the thing. Her rolls were really good, so I don't know if this advice is actually – or this opinion is really warranted. But I think even if it were like an open-faced toast, it may have been more successful because she could have put the pickles as garnish on top.
Nobody did like a smear bread, like a – you know, like a Nordic like open-faced sandwich.
Yeah.
Like a Danish situation.
Like that to me – would have been a one step up from like bread sandwich.
Yeah. I kind of is wild to me actually now in retrospect that no one did that.
Yeah. We have our third soup of the night, which was Brooke's soup. And Brooke had a poached sockeye salmon with dill, sourdough, seafood broth, and mustard seed.
Sounded great.
It sounded delicious. I really liked the sound of this dish.
Yeah, I like that she went poached too, mm-hmm. Especially because I just I was I find it interesting on reflection that we didn't get any, with the exception of Sheldon sort of mishandling the fish in his soup, they didn't talk a lot about like the cut of the fish or how the chefs chose to make the fish. Mm-hmm. Brooke, they talk a bit about, you know, why did you choose to poach it? But I was surprised that we didn't really talk too much about cooking it whole versus cooking it in, you know, individual portions, whatever. But yeah, so hers looked delicious. The judges really liked it. The broth was really lovely. Was just like right on the edge of being too much, but that was a good thing. In this case, mustard seeds worked well. Mm-hmm. Let's come back, because I think to your earlier point on it would have been nice to get a little bit of an overview on what kind of salmon we had at what salmon these chefs had at their disposal, what we should know about each salmon that may help us understand the decisions that they made. Mm-hmm. Because as we said earlier in the episode, Sheldon decides to use chum as part of his dish. And Pat was like pretty rude about it. You know, like at no point was he ever told or was it ever mentioned that this is something, not something that happens. I was maybe a little bit surprised at him being from a island state that he wasn't familiar with like chum, just even the concept of chum is chum, you know what I mean? Like, but I just thought that was really unfair to have like a toot about it.
Yeah.
Even the people of Juneau were pretty gracious. They were like, yeah, no, we don't eat that. But I always wondered why. Yeah. She was like, they give it to the dogs. It's like, okay. Chill, lady. This is a Wendy's.
That was an interesting character, because here's the thing. Very early on in her tenure as host, she got a lot of criticism for not being a trained professional. And I think a lot of it was unwarranted. I think a lot of it is perhaps like grounded in a bit of misogyny towards her. And so I am in no way defending that. But I do think that like by the end of her tenure in season 20, like she is considered an expert. Like she has ascended the ladder and is very well respected. We're sort of smack dab in the middle of this season.
Yeah.
And I think she is good in a lot of ways, but then she has moments like this where I'm like, yeah, but Padma, who are you to say this to me?
You're like, she's really digging her heels in on something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been rewatching season 4 just for funsies to watch a season that I don't have to take notes during.
Yeah.
And Padma does this thing in every single episode that kind of drives me crazy. And I think at the time she maybe like thought it made her look like a sophisticated or like really in the details, is she takes her ring finger and dips it in the sauce of anything she's given, and she like licks it off her finger. And she does it in every single episode.
Wow.
And it's like, I think she thinks it makes her look like she's in the kitchen in the weeds and like can just with a slight taste get all the notes of a sauce. But it's actually like gross and kind of rude.
Yeah.
Like at like one point, there's like a
that donut.
Yeah, there at one point there's like a large format challenge where they're like serving a block party, and she literally reaches into the large like chafing dish of stuff with her bare hands. Whoa. And licks sauce off her finger. And I'm like, no wanted you to do that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So anyway, that's a bit of a non sequitur on Pat.
Interesting. Yeah. So all to say, like, that to me, and again, I'm going to bring up the fried chicken challenge. For you to hold it against Sheldon that he didn't realize that people don't cook with chum here, but you did not introduce these people to a single person from Alaska at any point this episode. And then you like give Lizzie a pass on the fried chicken challenge because she's like, I don't really know fried chicken. And Padma's like, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not fine. That's like actually a really common.
That is really
KFC is literally
good
the most
parallel.
Popular chain restaurant in the world. Like it is everywhere.
That's a great parallel you've drawn, and I think illustrates the point that it was unfair to Sheldon. We also just love Sheldon. We're very protective of him. Okay, so Brooke wins this challenge, and unfortunately, Lizzie gets sent home.
Sucks. Oh, God.
Well, first I'll ask you, Bits. Lizzie's salmon sandwich, would you eat that?
I would eat that. Yeah. I mean, for the too. For the bread especially, it sounded like it was really good.
Yeah. Also, like, maybe the salmon wasn't seasoned well enough, but, like, at this level of the competition, I'd probably eat anything any of these chefs made.
Yep. Complete.
We're not going home for bad dishes. We're going home for mistakes.
Yes. Completely agree.
So could you tell me a little about where Lizzie is now?
Yeah. So as we met Lizzie, she was living in San Francisco. She'd been working in San Francisco at when she had her first child. This was predating Top Chef in 2006. She met her business partner, Christopher Loza. They opened an Italian-inspired Bar Bambino. In 6 years, that became one of the most recognized restaurants in San Francisco's Mission District. That's interesting. I wonder if it's still around. I didn't get that. But she's currently now the chef and owner of Handcrafted Catering, which is a boutique food and wine pairing event company that's based in Napa Valley. She resides there with her chef husband and their two children. And, of course, she was on Top Chef. But she was also on Beating Bobby Flay on the Food Network. So maybe we need to peep that episode. So, yeah, I think she's chilling, loving life in Napa. I mean,
I would say, like, that kind of sounds like she has it figured out.
Yeah, I agree.
Honestly, like, part of me just wants to open a boutique kitchen in Napa Valley and say fuck it all.
I wish I had the patience to, like, moderate my own affairs in that way, a.k.a. yeah, run my own business. Yeah. Like, to have the faith in that, I'm like, oh no, I just need to.
We have faith in the pod.
For corporate America. Yeah. We do have faith in the pod. And in pod we trust.
In pod we trust, but we also are simps for W-2. I'm doing my taxes right now. Full time jobs.
So, okay, Nancy, let's get into judgy table. Do you have a judgy table for today?
I don't really have anything strong. I sort of oscillated, so maybe this will end up being two for the price of one. Do you have something strong that you want to start with? Okay.
No.
So I'm just going to, like, make 2 points, and I apologize to the listeners at home. I don't think this is going to be super stunning. Nancy, your judgy table starts now. Okay, my first point is frittatas. I've just never been a fan. It's
agree,
a lot of
hard.
It's
agree,
like a what is the difference between a frittata and a quiche? I guess a quiche has a crust, but I also don't love quiche, if I'm being honest. Like, I just find with frittatas and quiche, oftentimes it's just overcooked eggs, and I'd rather have a runny yolk any day. That's how I feel about frittatas.
Okay, sorry. Keep going. I have another.
So my second one is kind of just like people obsessed with their sourdough starter post COVID. Like, I'm so tired of it. I'm bored of it. Is your personality, it's not interesting. Remember, there was a time when we were in our early 20s when people were like, will you water my plants when I'm away? Like, being a plant mom was an identity, and now, like, being a sourdough mom is an identity. And I'm just, like, so not interested in that as a personality. That's kind of all I got for judgy table today.
I love that. I love that. Thank you. Was, like, real kind of just.
Just thoughts.
Yeah, it wasn't thoughts.
No passion,
it wasn't,
just thoughts.
There wasn't a ton of passion behind it. Let's talk about the frittata because.
Okay.
I actually completely agree frittatas just taste like overcooked eggs, 1,000%. I think when a quiche is done well, it's amazing. I actually make a pretty good quiche. I made quiche a lot during COVID, but you have to have a lot of cream. Like, it requires cream and it requires cheese. Otherwise, it's not like the silky, creamy. Mm-hmm. But frittatas are gross, dude. I just
think it's
like metallic. It gets like the eggs to that metallic doneness. And then you have just chunks of stuff that is never, ever cooked all the way through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Vegetable, potato, it's never done all the way. My host family, when I studied abroad in Morocco, loved to make frittata. And it was not good. Mm. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for trying.
I could leave it on frittata.
I could leave it.
Leave it.
Okay.
Do you have a judgy table?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let my lackluster judgy table be an inspiration that they don't need to be mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, this one won't be mind-blowing.
Okay, Bits, your judgy table starts now.
Coffee pods.
Oh, I like this.
So we had a sponsor this episode, Green Coffee something, whatever.
Green Mountain Coffee.
Yeah, so Brooke is going to Costa Rica, which we forgot to mention because of this sponsor, Green Mountain Coffee. I come from a, like, you know, my parents use them a lot. I think they've kind of, like, run their course in terms of the, you know, in terms of society. Like, there was a time where coffee pods were very popular and everything was like, it was just so easy and convenient. The flavor is horrible. It's not good coffee. It's just obviously bad for the world to have, yes, to have this much like one single use plastic and just for like a single cup of coffee. It's just, there's nothing about it that is good. It's actually not that hard to make a cup of coffee. It's really not that much more effort. So I'm just having a hard time understanding what the whole allure is.
I agree. That's it. Also, that there's like a singular machine that you need, yeah, for it.
Now this, like, machine can only do this. I mean, you can get them to do like hot chocolate and tea, but then it always tastes like coffee because you just like ran coffee through it. So yes, you kind of can't.
I used to watch when I was growing up a lot of Elton Brown on the Food Network, Good Eats. Mm-hmm. I loved that show. And he always railed against unitaskers in the kitchen. So single-use products. He was like, never buy an espresso pod machine. Don't buy like a garlic masher. Like, you can mince the garlic yourself.
Right.
There's always, like, he was very opposed to that. And I would come home from school every day and watch that show. And it really stuck with me.
You're like
the one unitasker I have in my kitchen, because I love it, is an apple slicer.
That is nice. That just takes a lot of time too, and to core it. That is actually a time saver.
I just, when my sisters and I were young, we used to go to like a music class, and they had a song about cutting apples with an apple slicer. It was called the Down 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 song. And so we call an apple slicer a down down downer. And I literally can't have a kitchen without a down down downer.
I think it's a great, I'm like that. I would say salad spinner is my single use, can't be without.
Oh, but I don't think that salad spinner is a single use item, because you can also use it as a colander.
True. Yeah.
You can rinse things in it. Like, you can rinse, like, I would not put that in a single use.
Yeah. Category. Like, very prescribed use. Yeah. You're right. You're right. You're right.
Yeah. Apple slicer, one use, and espresso pod maker or whatever, coffee pod maker.
Yep.
Talk about a single use item.
Single.
Indeed. Anyway, okay, that brings us to the end of episode 14. So long, Lizzie. Hello, episode 15. We are getting really close to the finale, and we're getting really close to the return of Last Chance Kitchen's champion. And we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.